Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose Podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything. Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to themangogirl.com.
This is Dr. Ava Eagle Brown with Pain to Purpose Podcast live on Bashani Radio, coming to you all the way from New York City, where we're always talking about everything. As it is the first of my podcast today, I really wanted to take the next couple stories and the next couple podcasts to really introduce myself to you. I want to tell you about my life story, my journey, who I am, and most importantly, why did I label this podcast Pain to Purpose? So today we're going to talk about who's the daddy, because I think it all started with who is my dad. I'm a little girl who grew up in the beautiful island of Jamaica. But as beautiful as it is, I actually had one of the most challenging experiences as a child into adolescence and probably adulthood. And the journey started with my mom, who was a teenage mother. Now, you all know Caribbean teenage mothers. First of all, you shouldn't even be having a baby as a teenager, but that was my life. My mother gave birth to me at 16 years old, and her mother actually threw her out of her house because, as you know, Caribbean parents, that's a big shame on the family. And through that, my mom actually found my stepfather, and in that familial situation is how I was born. So I was born to a new father who wasn't my father, and life as a child was really challenging. And I grew up in that situation, going to school, being bullied, not knowing actually who my father was. As a matter of fact, at 44 years old, and in this exact moment, I still am not very clear on who my biological dad is. But I grew up with such low self-esteem. I grew up with a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. I grew up feeling as though I did not belong. I grew up selling mangoes on the train, becoming the breadwinner for my family. And my mom had quite a few of us. We lived in a really one-room shack, literally one-room shack. And for those of us who are probably black, and I'm going to say black because probably this is quite more familiar to our culture, you know that one room that you have, and your mom would take that sheet and she would make a line and she'd separate the room into two rooms. And I remember actually growing up, and this is really embarrassing, I grew up thinking that my mom was in pain constantly because over behind the sheet you could hear noises. And I thought my stepfather was beating my mom. Now, I don't have to explain the rest of that. You can understand that. But within the community that I grew up, my actual so-called father that my mother associated me with lived. And as a child, that was the largest house in the community. And I remember passing it, you know, and really feeling like I'd love to stop by, but I would not dare do that because they never even looked at me. I was like the scum of the earth. I was like this discarded piece of meat. And in my book, The Mango Girl, I wrote and explained it as my mom told me that when she went to that house, which is my father's parents' house, to actually say to them that, look, I'm pregnant for your son. They were so scornful. They chased her away. And I grew up for a very long time not knowing who my father was. And for any girl who craves for a father, I remember growing up feeling that I didn't belong. I grew up feeling that, you know, there was something wrong with me. Like, why was I so different? Why did my father not want to own me? Was I that ugly? I don't know if anybody listening to this can relate to that. Like, you grew up feeling like you just didn't belong. You grew up feeling like you're not worthy. And that pain I carried around for a very long time. I think even as I speak to you today, I can be very candid and honest about it, that there are moments when I still feel like I don't belong, because I have spent 44 years on this earth, and to date, I still don't know who my real father is. Now, let me tell you why I titled this, Who's the Daddy? I remember being in high school, and I remember sitting down there in Jamaica, hot classroom, windows are opened, and a man came there and he pointed, you, and everybody looked, even me, not even thinking that this man was going to be trying to say he's talking to me. Now, embarrassingly so, this man was rumored to be mad, had a mental problem, and everybody kept looking at me, he's talking to you, Ava. I'm like, no, he couldn't be talking to me. I don't even know him. And the teacher paused and went to the window to ask him, you know, what's going on? How can we help? And he said, I'm talking to my daughter. Are you for real? Like, can you imagine as a teenager, you're sat there and this is the embarrassing scenario you found yourself in. And he said very clearly, you're my daughter. And as a child, I was confused. I remember thinking, hold on, here's this very rich man who my mom says my dad. And here's this mad, raggedy-looking man who's saying, I'm his daughter. Who really is the daddy? And to this day is a question I ask, who's my dad? Who is the daddy? Is it the madman or is it the father who my mom gave me to? Now, to be very frank and honest with you, I actually prefer that my father is the madman. And I'm going to tell you why. My father, who my mom gave me to, who actually I ended up living with, after having not associated himself with me as a father for many years, except for sending me to the shop to buy cigarettes and, you know, run his errands, he actually, the first time he had a chance to be my dad, he sexually assaulted me. And that has impacted even this podcast. It's impacted my life. My life was never the same. And so when I look back at my life, I actually would prefer to know and to find out, especially after he placed his dirty hands on me, that the man who was mad was my father. And to this day, it is such a torn subject for me, because on my father's side that my mom gave me to, there are some situations and some family members who I've grown to love. I call them uncles and aunties and brothers. And I just feel like I'd always want them to be my family. On the flip side, my father who, and I just said my father, listen to that. I just owned him. My father who is mad, or who was mad actually, they're both dead. I would have loved to find out if it's my father. I'd have loved to go and find out. And then I just feel torn that if I went to look for my father, who is the madman, and found his family and had a DNA test done, would I really want to know? I don't know. I mean, let me hear your thoughts. Do you think I should find out? Because I have children who, I'm a mother, I've got two beautiful kids, and my kids don't really know who their real father, their real grandfather is. And it's kind of left a void in my heart, but I'm also unsure of what it will get me. Probably it will give me closure, but sometimes closure comes with its own problems. Am I opening up a new can of worms? And so it's left me feeling like I've come this far in my life on my own. What difference would it make? So I went through my life like that, and I went through my life just feeling like I wasn't a child who should be here. I went through that pain. I went through that feeling of undesirableness. I went through that feeling of abandonment. My mother gave me to my father, the one she claimed to be my dad, and he went to live with his girlfriend, and he took me, and in that house, I struggled. I thought that although it wasn't a one-room shack, it was a beautiful house. And I'm going to pause here to say to parents who are listening that when you think your child is going to better is not always best for your children. Because when I spoke to my mom when I became 30, when she came to visit me in London, she actually felt that sending me to live with my father and my stepmother was the best thing for me, because we were so crammed, we're living like cockroaches, you know, on top of each other. But she didn't realize that although that house was bigger and better amenities, I actually had one of the hardest times in that house that shaped who I am today. It was in those four walls that my stepbrother, my step uncle, my own father treated me like this sexual object, like I was just this piece of meat that everybody came and had fun with. And I remember the day in that house when my father laid his hands on me for the first time. I remember even thinking about it right now gets me all emotional. I remember, I didn't even know it was wrong because I was about 11 or so years old. I mean, I'm getting old now, but I was between 10 and 11 and a half. And I remember just trying to get close to him, to get to know him, because I'd spent all this time being bullied at school, being jeered, being mocked, of not knowing who my dad was. And so I was so excited that when I had this union, because my other siblings had their father, who I love very much, and I still love him today. Him and my mom and him are still together. But I spent this time yearning for that biological connection. So when I went to live with him, I was too excited. So I spent every fleeting moment I could get with this man, only to realize that the first chance he had to pounce, he pounced. My stepmother was in politics, and that meant that she was constantly away. And so I would be left in the care of my father. And do you know what? So should I be. I should be able to stay in the presence of my father and be safe, because he is my parent. And the first chance he had, he laid his hands on me. And I remember not understanding, because in the Caribbean at that time, nobody spoke to you about sex and inappropriate behavior, not like I have to do with my own children now. Nobody spoke to you about those things. And I remember the first time he touched me, I just knew it felt wrong. I just didn't know what it was, but I knew it felt wrong, and it felt just a bit dirty. It felt uncomfortable. And I remember pulling away, and I ran, and I just ran. And he said, "Nobody would believe you. I didn't do anything to you." And he said, "I didn't do anything to you, and nobody would believe you. And your stepmother would just believe that you're trying to destroy her happy home." And if you grew up in the Caribbean in the 70s, that made sense, because you're a child. You're meant to be seen and not heard. Nobody will believe you. And I remember running away and kept that secret for a long time, because I just believed his words. Nobody would believe you. And in that moment, I just wish I actually had a person in my life who I felt like I could trust enough that I could tell. I was talking to a police officer who was a childhood friend of the family at the time, just 2 weeks ago, and I was telling him we were going through it, and he was really angry. And he said to me, "Why didn't you come to me, Ava? Why didn't you tell me?" And I remember saying to him, "Who would believe me?" And he said, "I would." And I said, "But you were friends with the family. Why would I trust you to come to you?" Because you see, when these things happen to you guys, let me tell you something, having been there, you learn a couple of things. One of them is your fault. I grew up for a very long time feeling like it was my fault. It was my fault for feeling that I needed to be with my dad. I wanted to be in his company. It was my fault for feeling like I was the problem. So you learn that it's your fault. You become mute. You literally stop talking unless it was necessary. And then you trust no one. Like, it is so, I grew up not trusting people for a long time. In fact, today, I can look back at my relationships with men and realize how much that has impacted me. Because when the first man who's supposed to show you how a man should treat you abuses you, it does something to your core. It does something to your self-confidence, your self-esteem, your self-worth, your self-love. Who you are as a woman is totally rattled. And I grew up feeling like, again, my second set of abandonment, my second set of feeling like I was worthy. I've had to work on my self-esteem so much. And it's daily work, you know, it's daily work. But that father who took me as his daughter and then was able to do the things he did is not uncommon. There are several women and men listening to me right now who can relate to this. It's a very popular, sadly so, situation in all communities. It's not just, you know, people used to say it's not just the Black community, it's everywhere. I have not come across a race that has not had sexual abuse inside of it. And so I remember when I ran away from my father and I would sit at the table with him or I'd be in the house with him, the discomfort I felt. And I kept wondering, now that I'm an adult, even observing my own children, how is it that my stepmother didn't see the pain that I carried? All of the, you know, the being distanced, how I was always trying to occupy myself doing something. And through that process, that stage of my life, I cannot tell you how much I suffered. I carried around so much on my back as a child. I carried around so much anger. I was so angry. I was so angry that even in school, I was constantly, literally constantly getting in trouble. I was problematic in school. I was always running away from school. I was always bunking school, which means I was not going to school. I was acting up in class. I was crying out for help. I wanted somebody to realize that something wasn't right. And I remember, even now, I was having the conversation recently, talking about how growing up as a child, it was for that moment when my father touched me, was the first time I realized that my actual pubic area, as it stood, was not what my vagina was. Because I grew up feeling and believing that that surface outside was my vagina. It was my father that helped me to realize where it was. And I just felt like that was a violation. And I'm actually pausing in this moment to say to all predators, because predators listen to podcasts like this, that I want you to think about the pain, the hurt, the anguish, how you actually rip that girl or boy apart when you step into their life and you're meant to be parenting absentia, or you're meant to be somebody who's meant to be there and who's meant to have their backs, and you're meant to be an example, but you stand there and you take advantage of them. I'm going to take a quick break and then we come back to this conversation. I'm back, guys, and I don't know how you feel with that first segment, but I just hope that the whole aim of this is to be able to talk about these things, because somehow, you know, there are some communities that are afraid to talk about sexual abuse. There are some people who are afraid to talk about it. And my hope is that in doing this, that somebody could be stopped in their tracks from, you know, going through with abusing somebody, or somebody would be able to come to their parents and be honest and be open. Because I wish that I was brave enough at the time to not listen to my father's words. I wish I was brave enough to have spoken, because a lot of the pain and the anguish and the hurt that I carried around for so many years, I didn't have to. And so I want parents to be able to create that environment that children can feel safe coming to talk about it. And so I'm just saying that for those of us who think about abusing children, think about, I describe it like this. My father, I was like this beautiful rose. And he took me in his hands. Now, roses are very delicate and they're precious. And he just crushed it. Because that's how it felt. For years, that's how my life felt. And I think that fathers who believe that their daughters are theirs to play around with that, or any adult who believe that they can do that, is just, there's a psychological problem. There's something wrong. And if you have to turn to your own children or people who are entrusted in your care, then you need to go and seek some help. Because there's a notion that kids are not abused in their homes, and I think that's wrong. All of the abuse I've had as a child, and as I go through this series, I'm going to be sharing with you a lot of my journey, a lot of my abuse. This is the beginning. This is where it started. It started in my little childhood, but it went up until I was an adult. And I can see how all of the things I've been through have been connected and have been linked to that sore that one action of my dad impacted the rest of my life. It impacted the choices I made with men. It impacted some of the career choices I made. It impacted how I dressed. It impacted so much in me as a person. And I want to say to parents and families who are listening to this that children are often abused by people they know. Children are often abused by people they know. And there are quite a number of persons who I work with today, and I know that I'm going to hopefully bring on this podcast, you know, to talk about their pain, especially around abuse. I want to encourage you that if you're thinking and feeling that there's something that you're carrying around, that pain of your abuse, that you need to find someone who you can trust. Find someone who you feel safe with, because it is not easy to talk about these things, but there's freedom in talking about it. And find that safe space. And every country around the world, there are different places that you can be signposted to. And I think as we do this series, we're going to be trying to find some of the, you know, major ones to put in the confirmation and the conversation at the bottom, because these are not easy conversations to be had. But I can guarantee you that when you talk about them, you have healing. So let me talk to you about some of the things I had to do to help me to come to this place. I had to first realize that it wasn't my fault. And I want that to sink in, because for a very long time, I grew up thinking it was my fault. I had to realize this wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. You were meant to look after me. I was meant to trust you. You were meant to be there for me. You're my parent. And I was trying to make up for all of that lost time. So trying to get close to you as my father was something I should be able to do. So the first thing I did was I recognized it wasn't my fault. And I wasn't going to carry around this pain anymore. And so for anybody who is listening right now, I don't know what the pain may be. The pain doesn't have to be sexual abuse. All of us at some point in our lives are either going through something, are in the middle of something, or are on the end of something. And so wherever you are in your life right now through your pain process, I want you to understand that. I'm going to list how I coped with mine and help you to understand that you can cope with yours as well. So first of all, it wasn't my fault. I released that. Let's unpack that. It wasn't my fault. I understood that you were meant to be there for me and you let me down. So I accepted it wasn't my fault. You let me down and I forgave myself. I had to forgive me. And a lot of times we carry around pain thinking that the forgiveness piece is about the other person. It's not. So when I recognized that forgiveness was about Ava, it was about this little girl that was stuck for so long feeling that she didn't belong, it was her fault, I had to learn to forgive myself. And the moment I forgave myself, I started feeling lighter, I started feeling better, and I started making better choices. Now, this didn't happen until I was in my 30s. So imagine all the years of carrying this around. So it wasn't my fault. Forgive myself, and then I forgave my father. Whew, that was a big one. I forgave him when I was in my 30s. I had to forgive him because he was not going to hold me ransom and prisoner anymore. And then I forgave him, and then I went and I sought therapy. I went and I sought, you know, help. I spoke to psychotherapists. I spoke to psychologists. I read. I started writing. And that's how the book Mango Girl came about. And gradually over the years, I've been able to get to a better place. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there are not days when I think about my abuse and I cry. And crying doesn't mean that it doesn't, you know, crying doesn't mean that I'm still there, but you still have the remnants of that pain. So I really, really believe that therapy is such a big piece of the healing, and therapy comes in different forms. You know, I wrote, I sought counseling, I sought peer counseling, I had mentors and coaches, I meditated, I literally took ownership for Ava. I couldn't take ownership for anybody else's behavior, but I could take ownership for mine, and I took ownership of myself, and I made critical decision that I was going to make it no matter what. And so for anybody who's listening right now, and you might be thinking that this is just touching some pulse areas in your life, and you're wondering, how do you start? Start where it feels comfortable. Find somebody who you trust and find people who have your back and you feel like you can free fall into and you feel safe. Okay? And you feel safe. So take ownership. I'm going to talk to you about how I took ownership. I took ownership of Ava by literally saying, you know what? That was my past. Okay, so I was sexually abused by my dad. But did that have to define who I become, in who I, the young woman I become? No. So I was like, okay, cool. I don't have to be stuck there. There was a future ahead of me. This didn't have to define me. So I literally made sure I went to university. I studied. I became a teacher. And I want to tell you about that whole journey as I go through this process. I became a teacher. I started teaching young children. And that was so therapeutic because I felt like as an adult, I could be around children and they could trust me. And I felt like I needed to look out for them. And so I started writing my story. I started volunteering. I started giving back to charity. I started mentoring girls without even realizing from a young age. And I started focusing on me. I put all I had in me. It was all about me. I started working on my self-esteem, my confidence. I looked in the mirror and felt like I was beautiful. So those are some of the things that you need to look at. You know, how do you bounce back from the pain? How do you build yourself up? How do you build your self-confidence, your self-esteem? It's not going to be a snap of a finger, but it can be done. So for those who are listening to me and you're thinking, oh my God, this happened so long ago. Let me say something to you, especially in the Black community. And I can speak to that because I know that very well. We actually carry around so much pain because we have this thing that some things we must not talk about, but they impact our health. So let us start mending the pain starting today. And I'm going to set you a task. I want you to go. We have a journal for the Pain to Purpose podcast. It's on Amazon. The link's going to be here. I want you to get that journal. And I want you to open up to the first activity, which is basically asking you to make a list of all the pain that came out as you listen to this first episode. List them down unreservedly. Just let them go. List them. And then once you have listed them, I want you to rank them into what is most painful for you. And then I want you to literally get a jar. And I want you to literally write all of them and literally put them in the jar. Like you are literally releasing them. Just put them in the jar for now. Put them in the jar. And then some people can be ceremonious. You can bury that jar. You can do a jar or you can burn them and you can take that ash and you can go into your back garden and you can literally bury it, or you can get a Chinese lantern and you can release it. We have to start releasing these things. Take off the hunchback of Notre Dame and let's move on. In closing, I want to say to you, I want to leave you one nugget. And the one nugget I want to leave you with is simply this. That everything you need to overcome your pain is inside of you. And remember that pain is temporary. It may last for a lifetime or it may last for a moment. It is totally up to you. Thank you so much for listening to Pain to Purpose podcast, our very first show on Bashani Radio Network. I'm so excited. I'm so grateful that you're here. I'm so grateful you're listening to us. And remember, this show is all about showing you how people recycle their pain and start living their best lives. Until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything. Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. go to themangogirl.com.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.